Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Losada, and today we're going to be talking about cultural ideals that can impact your birth flow. Do you have a need for control and certainty? Are you a perfectionist? Do you highly value knowledge and technology? Do you resist things getting wild? Do you strive to do it all? If any of these resonated with you, you're going to want to pay close attention to this conversation with Britta Bushnell. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Family Album, a family-focused photo sharing app that makes it easy for parents to share photos and videos of their kids with their family. Find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by BetterHelp, the world's largest e-counseling platform, making professional counseling accessible, affordable, and convenient, so you can get help anytime, anywhere. Go to betterhelp.com/birthful to get 10% off your first month. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thank you so much for listening and all the love you give this show. If what you hear is helpful, do make sure you subscribe. It's free, and you know that way you will not miss a thing. Also, if you'd like to further support this podcast, support its sponsors, who for this week's case are Family Album and BetterHelp. All right, so we're still going on full force with our 5 years of Birthful celebration. We are on week 4 of 5, which is taking us right through the end of January. Now, aside from all the goodies that we are giving away and the Facebook Live with guests that I've been doing every week, I also wanted to make this milestone even more memorable by providing you with more amazing Birthful resources. I am so super excited to announce that starting February 6th, I am launching a Birth Preparation online class. Yes, I am doing it. I get frequent emails asking if I have any birth classes, and finally I can say that yes, I do. The best part is that I have decided to do it via live webinars, so that way people can participate from all over the world and we can interact in real time and get, you know, allows me to adapt the classes for the specific needs of those taking it. The structure is going to be different from any childbirth class out there in that I'm using the exact work that I do with my doula clients during our prenatal meetings as the foundation for these classes. And in fact, we're going to take a deep dive into what you can do during pregnancy and during labor to support your physiology so that birth flows. And you know that when birth flows, there are fewer interventions and births are easier and shorter and everyone is happier. And yeah, that's the ultimate goal of flowing birth. So all the details are for the classes are at birthfulcourses.com. Go sign up now because classes start February 6th. And I'm only going to do these live classes online a few times per year. If you have any questions, join me this Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time for the Facebook Live as part of our 5-year celebration, and I can tell you more about the classes there if you'd like. And also my guest for this week's Facebook Live is going to be neuroscientist and doula Greer Kirschenbaum, who has generously donated an infant sleep session that we're going to be giving away live that day amongst the people who show up. And we're also going to be announcing the winner of this week's amazing bundle. Week 4 is all about parenting. That's why Greer is going to join me. But the bundle covers you for and provides support for anything from... The theme for this week is parenting, and that's why Greer is joining me. But the bundle itself has things to provide support and cover you from pregnancy all the way to parenting through birth, through everything. It's got goodies from Mama Natural, from Dr. Rachel Reed of the blog, amazing blog, Midwife Thinking, Jen McLellan from Plus Size Birth, Cindy and Jana, as well as a digital download of the amazing These Are My Hours movie, and some sleep bras and maternity bands from Playtex. There is a lot. There's just too much going on for me to mention it all. You still have time to enter, and the details for the giveaway are on Instagram. Our handle is at Birthful Podcast, and details for the classes are at birthfulcourses.com. And then make sure you join us Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time for a Facebook Live at facebook.com/birthful. There is just so much going on. Okay, so for today's episode, I am talking with Dr. Britta Bushnell about 8 cultural ideals that impact your birth. And I am so excited to have Britta back on the show, not only because I love talking to her, but because understanding how these ideals can impact and even mess up your birth wishes can create a big aha moment that can positively shift how you approach birth. And if hearing this does provide you with an aha moment, do let me know. I want to know. Okay, here we go. Welcome, Britta. It is so lovely to have you back on the show.
Oh, it is so good to be back. I always love sitting and having a conversation with you, whether it's in person or over the phone or whenever, a cup of tea. It's just wonderful.
Well, and that's it. We've been very lucky this year, or last year, we were very lucky that we got to see each other face to face a couple of times in conferences because we live on opposite ends of the country.
Indeed, we do. And yet we've had a chance to be together on sort of both sides of the country now this year.
Yeah.
No, this past year, yeah.
And you've got lots of things going on this year, but so I want to hand things over to you and let you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and what's coming up.
Okay. Well, thank you. Let's see. So the big thing that I have going on is I'm publishing a book coming up very soon. It's publishing on January 28th. And it's called Transformed by Birth, Cultivating Openness, Resilience, and Strength for the Life-Changing Journey from Pregnancy to Parenthood. And it's sort of my baby, my newest baby. I mean, I have 2 children who are almost 20 and 17, but this is my latest baby. And I was cracking up with some birth professional colleagues recently, and they were suggesting that I wrap the baby in a baby wrap in my book and carry it around after it's been born, which was sort of cracking me up a little bit. But the book is born from my 20 years experience working with birthing families, and as well as my work, my doctoral work, in mythology. I have a PhD in mythology with an emphasis in psychology. And my book is really looking at how we are transformed by the experience of becoming parents and by going through the process of birth, and looking at how there are these cultural myths or these societal myths, these ideals that influence how we birth. And they're like the water to the fish. It's like we don't necessarily see them, but we are surrounded by them all the time. And my doctoral work was really about looking at life through a mythological lens. And so I applied that and ended up writing my dissertation about childbirth. And a lot of people are like, childbirth and mythology, like, do those really go together? But to me, they informed one another in a really beautiful way. So my dissertation was really the research phase of writing this book.
Mm-hmm. And I think I will link in the show notes because this is the second episode we're doing together. The previous one was called How Will Birth Transform You?
Yes.
And you were fresh with doing that research and you were talking about creating a book, and we really focus on the transformation part of it. But I love how things have evolved. And now today we're going to talk a little bit more about that water, those ideals that we
yes.
kind of absorb that you go into deeply in the book. But ideals that can really impact your birth, they can positively or more often negatively, and like what you can do with them or how to approach them and just acknowledge
Absolutely.
Them. Yeah.
Yeah. The birth and postpartum parenthood, I mean, in many ways, they impact our lives. And I really use my book as a way to say, okay, there's a lot that we all need to know as human beings. And here's an opportunity when people are preparing for birth to learn some things, to unpack these ideals and say, oh, okay, how do I want to be in my life for birth, for parenthood, but also just for life in general?
Mm-hmm. And to me, when I was reading the preview of the book and getting into these ideals, it was, and I've heard you speak before, and it was so much aha. Like, that's why I think we've connected and become good friends as well, is because we kind of approach birth in that same way.
I think we do.
Because some of these...
We're getting to have your audience now listen to you and I getting to chat. That's what's fun.
Yeah. And some of these ideals, right, are things that I base my work on as well. And from, you know, we're talking about the same things, but with our own lenses. So that's so much fun.
So much fun.
So let's do it. You mentioned these ideals first. Where do these ideals even come from?
Yeah, which is a great and juicy question. I mean, so first, I could have probably identified, I got to the point where I was in the 15, almost 20 different ideals that I had sort of identified. I was required for my dissertation to narrow that down. And then for my book, even more so. So they're really kind of looking at what they are is sort of the way that this culture, this society kind of addresses life. So some of them, like the glorification of independence and the go-it-alone mindset, I mean, that one is woven into the fabric of democracy and Western culture, especially in the U.S. I mean, this country, the U.S., is built on the Declaration of Independence. We hold the ideal of independence, and the go-it-alone, the pull-it-up-by-your-bootstraps mentality is woven into the tapestry of even the foundation of the nation. And mm-hmm. So that seeps in, that leaks into how many of us operate in our lives without necessarily even noticing it. It's just there. It's part of how we move through the world. And, you know, the idea of you're supposed to be able to just do it on your own. And I'm putting supposed to in air quotes, right? Because that's that overarching kind of societal expectation. And that's kind of what I'm looking at here, and how those seep into how we address even how we move forward in our birth and our parenthood. Go ahead.
And these ideals, like, not as we go through them, I think the notions of them are not necessarily like good or bad. It's just things that we do. I think It's more of how we tend to lean the pendulum so way off over to one side that then it becomes a detriment when because birth does ask you, or postpartum, or having a baby, like that whole thing, like it goes completely, that this one in particular, the glorification of independence, goes opposite with the it takes a village mentality. Exactly. As well, right?
Yes. So really each of these that I identified and looked at has a functional side, has a way in which it helps us in our lives, but it's tested in birth and new parenthood. They're each tested. They each have an element that you go, ooh, wow. And it makes modern birth more challenging, because some of these have gotten heightened over the years and decades and centuries. There's ways in which it's gotten more challenging to address them. I mean, as we become more technologically savvy and have information in our pocket at all times in the form of our cell phones, it's gotten harder for us to sit in wonder. That's become a harder, less familiar feeling. And so it's like, yeah, intellectual knowledge and technology are wonderful tools. They're fantastic. When we swing the pendulum to the side of they are the only form of wisdom, that's when we get out of balance. And we need to find a way to balance the veneration of intellectual knowledge and technology with an acceptance of wonder, a curiosity about wonder.
Yeah. And I love the, you know, going deep into this because it does bring, it allows us for even curiosity within our own lives of like, oh my goodness, this is what I do. And I never realized or as a culture, a society, this is what we do. And I didn't quite realize it, that we did it. And then it gives you the opportunity to step outside of it and play with doing things a little bit differently.
Right. I mean, and that's what's fun about using a mythological kind of mindset is that pulling back exercise, that exercise of pulling back and looking and say, okay, what are the stories? What are the beliefs? What are the ideals that are the water within which we swim?
Mm-hmm. And Britta, I wanted to, so you identified eight different ideals, and I wanted to go through them and also think about a little bit about how they impact birth. Do you want
to
go?
I'd love to.
So how do you want to do it? Like name all of them and then impact birth, or go one at a time and do both things? What would you like?
We can do either. I mean, I can name all eight and then we can go through them, or whatever. I mean, I've already named two, but the first one that we have to start with is the very first one that I address. And then we can go from there.
Okay.
I think that's where we should start. Because the first one is the need. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Let's do this. Let's, before we, because you're going to jump in and I'm not going to be able to stop you. So let's take a break before we go with that first one and onwards. We'll be right back. Have you ever been looking for a specific photo on your phone and spend quite a long time just scrolling by, not being able to find it, even though you remember when it happened? I know I'm constantly frustrated that my photos are deep in the depths of my phone photo roll or scattered over email or text messages that I have received from my husband or daughter, who knows from who. It's really frustrating that I can't find the photos that I want when I want to. Enter Family Album. Family Album is a fantastic family-focused photo sharing app that makes it easy for parents to share photos and videos of their kids with their family. The app is free and it offers unlimited storage and has no ads. I really, really like the fact that your photos and videos are automatically sorted by date, or that they put together short video collages with 1-second clips highlighting your best photos and videos, so then you can watch how your child has grown or your children have grown and changed over time. Now, another one of my favorite features is that Family Album keeps things private so that only people you invite can see your family's photo album. This has been really great for my parents and siblings because we can now easily share pictures exclusively with them. For years now, it's been really hard not only to find the photos on my phone, but to coordinate and then send them to my family. And of course, that made me feel super guilty. Now we can just all focus on enjoying the photos and have little conversations about them by adding comments. This definitely makes us feel like we're closer together. I highly recommend you give Family Album a try, and I think you're going to be pleasantly surprised. Remember that Family Album is free to use with unlimited storage and has no ads. Family Album does not collect user data and has strong privacy controls in place. Find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web. That's Family Album, all in one word. And we are back talking with Britta Bushnell about ideals that can impact or mess up your birth and postpartum and even life. So,
yes, mess them up or that we can find balance to them. Yes. Yes. All right. Yes, I was ready to dive in there before we took the break.
So go ahead. What's the first one?
Ground myself. Yes. So the first one that really in many ways influences the additional seven is the need for control and certainty. This one is woven into the fabric. I mean, frankly, it's part of the human condition. It's not even Western culture or modern. But it has gotten more extreme as the possibility of being in control, the reality of it has gotten more possible over through technology, through science, through predictability. We've actually gotten to a point where we have started to really believe that control and certainty are possible. And that's where the pendulum has swung so far to that side that it's messed us up a little bit, that it's actually gotten us into a place of believing that a due date means that that's when our baby should come, that that's a form of certainty, that we can control things, that if we write a birth plan that is detailed enough, we will create the birth that we want. These are illusions of control and certainty that have made it in a way, I mean, those are actually symptoms of the desire for control and certainty.
And also why we latch onto them so deeply.
Exactly, because it's not really one of the things that I think is interesting about looking at these from the ideal place and from this mythological lens is that we actually get to go, oh, it's not just me. It's like, this is, of course you're wanting control and certainty. How could you not want control and certainty around birth? You've been living in a culture and in a society that tells you control and certainty is possible. And so we latch on to ideas that give us comfort in the form of giving us the suggestion that control and certainty might actually be attainable.
Right. And they also provide some sort of coping mechanisms, like they're comforting. If I feel I can control my day, then I feel more in, you know, if I thought
absolutely.
I couldn't control any part of my life, I would be an anxious wreck.
Exactly. And those same kinds of things show up in childbirth. And that's one of the reasons why there, you know, we do have birth plans and we do have things. And yet when we hold them from a mindset of this is going to create a certain outcome or control or create certainty, that's when we've swung the pendulum too far. And we actually need the balancing side of that, which is in the term that I use is an openness to the unbidden, that place of accepting that which we did not invite or control to come in and have its influence on what's happening. And that part of what we need as we move toward parenthood and birth is to expand our ability to sit with the unbidden, to meet the unbidden.
And frankly, the more we practice or give openness to our lives to let that unbidden in, like anything else, the more we practice it, the better we get at it and the more we can work with it. And that, as you were talking, I was reminded of something that happened a few weeks ago. And you know those Mad Lib things?
Yes.
Right? Yeah, of course you do. Like, and I never heard of a Mad Lib until I moved to the States, right? So there's that. But
yes, and I grew up filling them out on long car rides, so
right.
I know them well.
So my daughter was doing a Mad Lib for Thanksgiving as part of her homework, and it was sitting on the table, and I just went through and read it, and it was so fun. And just reading how silly and ridiculous it was, truly, like, it did a little shift on me. Like, my day was different that day just from reading it, of like, yeah, have some fun with things. Make it silly. Make it, like, nonsensical for a bit. See what happens.
Right. And some of that is because the way that Mad Libs work is it has a sentence with a blank line, and without knowing what really the sentence is, you put in an adverb or an adjective or anything like that, if I'm remembering ad libs properly.
Yes, and thank you for explaining it.
Yeah. And then you read it and it's hilarious often because you've just thrown in some random adverb and now it's worked in with some sentence and they're funny and they're unpredictable. They're unbidden. It's like those words pop in there and they toss you a little bit in the realm of your holding on to control because it's a bit messy. Mm-hmm. And that's true of birth and parenthood too. They get messy. And we've gotten really comfortable with things being neat and tidy and ordered, well ordered. So we need a little bit of that Mad Lib energy in our lives, some of that messiness, some of that unpredictability.
And so does that, this seems to be a good segue into, we're going to skip around, the third one that you have, which is reverence for order over wild.
Yes. So this one is one of my favorites, and it's really about that, yes, that part of us that likes things to be ordered, to, you know, we love our lists. I mean, my list helps me in my life tremendously. And this is the one where I use the Greek twin gods, Artemis and Apollo, to help exemplify what it is that I'm talking about in regards to order and wild. So Artemis is the goddess of, well, she's the main goddess of childbirth. And she's also the goddess of the wilderness. So she's the goddess who lives outside the bounds of culture. She lives close to the earth. She lives with the wild animals rather than with civilized people. She connects to the cycle of the seasons, of the sun and the moon, rather than clock time. Like she's that wild side. Whereas her twin, her brother, Apollo, is representative of culture, of being appropriate. And he's everything that happens within society, within a culture. He's about music and poetry and the arts and medicine, things that define people as being cultured, right? And Western society is highly Apollonian. We love clock time. We love things that are ordered and predictable and make sense and are put together, are socially acceptable behavior, you know, being polite. These sorts of things are very Apollonian. And this, and so we tend to move again in terms of that pendulum. We are more on the side of that Apollonian, well-ordered, societally appropriate side of the pendulum. But what we really need for birth is a little more comfort in that wild, out of control, not based on clock time, not connected to being politically correct or societally correct or pleasing. You know, there's this whole idea of, you know, you need to be pleasing to people. That's more, way more Apollonian. Artemis doesn't give a hoot about being pleasing to people. She's like, get out of my face. If I don't want you around me, the stories of what Artemis does when her privacy is threatened, or actually when somebody watches her without her permission, are brutal. Because she's like, that is my privacy matters to me. Well, Apollo is all about bright lights and keeping things bold and visible and public. And that's much more what this Western culture is more drawn to. Mm-hmm. But we need for birth some of this Artemisian, this wild side that allows us to be messy, that allows us to be impolite, That's what we need in birth, and frankly, in parenthood too, sometimes.
Oh, so much. And I was thinking, like, newborns and babies and toddlers, they're insanely Artemisian. Is that the word?
They are. Yes. Well, I made it one. It's in my book throughout.
I love
it. Artemisian. Yes. Yeah. There's so much about birth and new parenthood that is Artemisian. And when we are trying to put Apollonian values on top of birth and new parenthood, we struggle because they are so Artemisian by nature.
Yeah.
And so it's a, yeah.
Those babies are very not civilized.
Right. They're not civilized. They're not connected to clock time. They're way more connected to the cycles of seasons and days and nights. They're way more interested in the dark than the bright public lights and all of those things. It's just a very different, more animalistic type of living.
Mm-hmm. And if they do not want to do something, they will not.
And then there's that.
And who cares, yes. Right? No, bad. I don't care where I am or if I feel like I'm going to fart, I will fart right now.
Right. Well, and frankly, new parenthood is that way too. There is that element of the bounce back mentality is very Apollonian, mm-hmm. rather than allowing the animal body to heal and take time and do the animal stuff that it needs to do, like bleed and heal and poop and leak. All of those things don't really fit in that Apollonian ideals, those Apollonian ideals and values that we have been soaking in, which is one of the reasons why early postpartum can be so disruptive and so surprising for so many of us, is because it's so different. It's so Artemisian, and we're so used to being in this Apollonian way.
Yeah. No, I always say birth is so, so glamorous, right. End quotes, right? And I so appreciate also the images that we're getting in social media of like brand new moms in the mesh panties with big pads as they are holding their baby and, you know, like all things falling out all over the place and the big boobs
too.
And the stuff, because that's how it is. It's a reflection of how truly messy and unorganized and wild that stages.
Exactly. And that's a helpful movement of that swing that is frankly in response. It's the same kind of idea that made me respond in this way with this book. It's like it's culture saying, wait a minute, this is so extreme on this side. We need to show images of the panties and, you know, the mesh panties and the giant pads and the wrinkled bellies and the everything that shows that this put together idea is a fallacy, mm-hmm. and that it's one-sided, it's lopsided. And so we need to bring balance, because that's what I'm talking about in my book as well, is that the Apollonian culture has so many wonderful things to offer us, even in birth. And we need to balance it. We need to find more balance.
And in order to balance it, you have to, it's like I'm left-handed. So if you're left-handed, if I'm going to use my right hand, it's going to be really uncomfortable and weird. I can still do it, but I will at one point go like, oh no, I just want to use my left hand. And it's sort of understanding that contrast as well, that you are so good at doing Apollonian things that you got to spend more time doing Artemisian things to hone
yes,
that muscle.
Exactly. I mean, and that's, I come from a yoga background. I used to be a yoga teacher. And it's sort of that same idea that if you have a really flexible back, you don't want to just keep doing back bends. You actually need to do balancing poses and forward folds and strengthening postures, so that you're not just bending, because mm-hmm. that puts you out of balance.
Do you
want to have that balanced energy?
Do you have a practice that you recommend for people to sort of hone into this reverence for wild over order, or to try to switch it up, right?
Yes, I mean, there's a number of things that I share in the book, but one of them is actually even just getting out into nature as much as possible and being connected with that element of non-societal connection. So being in nature, being in your body, like anything that helps us get into the body rather than the mind is helpful for connecting into that wild side. Okay. Mm. So dancing is one of my favorites. And dancing in a Mad Libs kind of way, I'm just going to carry our little story forward. So putting on music and just boogieing, letting the body move rather than doing dance steps or, you know, yoga that I did a lot of Ashtanga yoga in my 20 years ago and even more recently than that. But Ashtanga is a very set sequence of poses. And while that does help me get into my body and moves me in the direction of that Artemisian side, it only takes me so far because it's not just responding to what my body wants to do. And so it's important to practice listening deeply to how does my body want to be moved right now?
Oh, and our bodies are so wise in telling us.
And so practicing that, dropping that down into the body and being out in nature is a great way to help connect with that.
I love the dancing. I love being out in nature. Let's do more of that. Stupid winter.
Yes, although I happen to love winter and snow. So when I tend to get really goofy and into my Artemisian side when I'm out in the snow.
Okay.
But I also don't live in it, so that makes a difference.
I will try to practice that. Let's take another break. We'll be right back. Let's be real. The transition into parenting is hard, and sometimes you do need more mental and emotional support, but it also needs to be something that can be easily fitted into your new daily flow. That's why I want to let you know about BetterHelp.com, which is pretty much the world's largest e-counseling platform. Their goal is to make professional counseling accessible, affordable, and convenient so that you can get help anytime, anywhere. Connecting with your personally matched, licensed professional therapist is quick and easy, but the convenience doesn't end there because you can log into your BetterHelp account anytime and send a message to your counselor whenever you feel the need. My experience is that responses are quite timely and thoughtful. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions and have them happen from the convenience of your own home. But don't just take my word for it. Go to BetterHelp.com/birthful to check out the testimonials that are posted daily. For example, one reviewer says, quote, "I was really nervous about starting therapy again and wasn't sure what to expect doing therapy through an app. I'm so glad I signed up and got Robin as my counselor. She has been very insightful and it has really got me thinking about a lot that is going on in my life and what I really want. She does a great job at creating a safe space and really listening," end quote. BetterHelp is not a crisis line and it is not self-help. It is professional counseling done securely online and available worldwide. BetterHelp is also more affordable than traditional offline counseling and financial aid is available. Go to BetterHelp.com/birthful, that's Better H-E-L-P, and join the over 700,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. As a special offer for Birthful listeners, get 10% off your first month when you go to BetterHelp.com/birthful. And we are back. So we've got the need for control and certainty. We have the reverence for order over wild. We briefly talked about the veneration of intellectual knowledge and technology. Did you want to say more about that one or did you want to move on to others?
I mean, that one sort of speaks to itself to a degree, but it is the one that says that the answers exist out there somewhere for all of us. as opposed to being able to look inside and inquire within ourselves about what might be the right choice or the right decision for us in this particular moment. And that's one of the ones that's really about reconnecting with that place of not knowing, of wonder, of being in the mystery. And the practice that I talk about with that one is inserting a pause. So rather than instantaneously going to your phone and doing an internet search for an answer, is to pause between the question in the mind and the impulse to answer it and expand that so that we can begin to get more comfortable with sitting in not knowing, which also helps us tune in better to our inner voice that may guide us toward the kind of information or the kind of support that would really feed us rather than just going to Dr. Google, which can then just put us into different kinds of spirals.
Right.
I'm seeing this a lot with new parents is the impulse to quickly look for an answer as if singular answers exist for all of us universally, which is just really not the truth. The truth is there are many different answers and even different answers for me today than maybe tomorrow. And we need to kind of move away from that idea that singular answers exist.
Yeah. And we are complex human beings that can be like contradictory in our realities on a daily basis.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And yes. I do appreciate, and I always, this one, I kind of approach on my own, when I speak about this on my, like when I, in my own practices, the way I phrase this, goodness, is leaning into things with curiosity. Because if you're then, you're with curiosity, then you're not resisting, but you're also opening for what is here rather than what I'm trying to find what you're looking for with a preconceived notion of more, let me explore what's there.
Yes, absolutely. I actually think one of the balancing energies to that veneration of intellectual knowledge and technology is curiosity. I mean, that's that balancing energy. So I love that.
Yay.
And I talk about that too a lot.
Yeah,
we've bonded over this one. Yes,
we do. Which one do you want to go to next?
Well, so then, if we're taking them semi in order of how they're addressed in the book, the fourth one is the vilification of pain, and so this one is that the idea that if we have pain, we should do something about it. You know, they added it to the vital signs, right? That if there is pain, it's like we have to do something about it. This culture is often speaking about how if something hurts, we should medicate it or we should do something about it, remove it, rather than having a moment and saying, okay, what is this pain teaching me? What's happening? And it dismisses the reality that there is suffering in being human. There is pain in being human. I mean, one of the noble truths that the Buddha identified is life is suffering. You know, that there is going to be suffering. There's going to be upset and pain. And I'm not just even talking physical. I'm talking that there's going to be hardship. There's going to be things that hurt or are uncomfortable. And how can we, rather than try and remove all pain, how can we create some ways to be with ourselves even when there is pain?
And that applies, of course, not only to childbirth and postpartum, but even to life. And it kind of reminds me, this is something I've been talking with other parents here in my community about lately as well, is this whole, along with the vilification of pain, we've got this glorification of happiness. And that,
exactly.
That should
those
be
are, our, those are connected, yeah. completely connected. Yes,
and that,
yes,
like,
yes.
Our ideal is we need to be happy all the time. And that creates a lot of problems.
It creates suffering.
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely. That's what I'm talking about here, is that this vilification of pain is saying, be happy, be happy, be happy, be, you know, blissful birth. It's like, well, hang on a second. It's okay. Sometimes things that are worth doing require hard work. They require difficulty, facing difficulty. Sometimes, you know, some of the greatest moments of transformation come through heat. You know, in alchemy, there's, you know, the way that you would change, or the alchemist said, you know, the way that you would change a base metal into gold was to apply heat and pressure. And that would be what would transfigure something from a base metal to gold. Well, I kind of believe that that's true sometimes in life, is that sometimes it is through the fire and through the pressure that things really sometimes change. Now, that's not always the case. I'm not somebody who says you have to suffer in order to change. No, I don't buy that either. But I don't buy that we should be wrapping up life in a bow, clapping our hands and saying, be happy, be happy, be happy. Like that, I think that that's discrediting the truth of being in a human form.
Right. And it doesn't have to be immense suffering, as you're saying, like, but you need a challenge to change. Like if you have no challenges, then there's no transformation.
There's no reason for growth.
There's no growth. And the thing is, one thing we know is the only constant in our universe is change. So
bingo.
If you're not, yeah. So if you're not willing to change, then there's not, you got a big problem.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. And I think also this, it's really important not only to approach birth and postpartum like this, but also as you're informing your parenting of what ideals you're passing down to your kids, if you're not allowing them to spend some time in suffering and figuring things out for themselves so that they can grow. And I am so guilty of this, because we do it as a society, right? We have this value, right. This ideal. It's like, oh, let me take it away. Let me take away your pain. And are you happy? How are you? When we focus on things around happiness so much, we're actually creating a lot more anxiety and sadness, like
exactly.
You were saying, suffering for our kids and for ourselves.
Exactly. These ideals are out there. It's not like there's something wrong with me because I vilify pain. It's part of what the water I've been ingesting, the air I've been breathing my entire life. And so, of course, I kind of vilify pain. And so that's why I need to bring it into my awareness, into my consciousness, and then go, okay, hang on a second. Maybe pain isn't all bad. And maybe it's okay for my child to suffer a little bit. Maybe it's okay for him to struggle. And I don't need to step in instantaneously and remove whatever it is that's challenging him. Maybe part of what needs to happen for him is to struggle or to move through it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, yeah, it's coming up all over the place in parenthood and in life. Yeah.
Yeah. And in terms of the idea, what to do, practice to mitigate this vilification of pain, did you have some suggestions?
Yeah, well, this is the chapter where I go into a lot of pain supporting practices. And I'm starting to shift my language from the term coping to how do we flow? Because coping implies a doingness, like a gripping. And I think often when we are facing struggle or pain, we need to, instead of like gripping and getting in there and doing everything we can and coping, especially when we're talking about labor, is we need to allow. we need to flow. It's like, how do we get out of the way of the pain? How do we get out of the resistance of the pain and allow there to be like a flow with it? And so sharing practices where you can practice flowing with that, but also identifying where in your life and how in your life you already do that. One of the things that I think is really important in preparation for birth and new parenthood is not feeling like you have to go out there and learn a whole bunch of new things. It's more about identifying the ways you are already doing that in your life now, and then building those skills. It's not like you're going to step into birth and all of the things that you've used your entire life to cope with pain are going out the door. It's like you're bringing those with you because that's how you've developed skills through your whole life, because you have faced pain. Mm-hmm. You have dealt with difficulty. So noticing what works for you, what helps you, those are things you want to identify and then grow.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I love that, figuring out how you already And one exercise that comes up a lot in childbirth education classes is, what's your go-to mechanism for pain? Like, what do you do when you stub your toe? Do you scream? Mm-hmm. Do you rub it? Do you want nobody to touch you? Do you, like, that can, maybe looking at things a bit like that can help inform of ways you already deal with things?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that it shows us some of our quick response. And then it's, you know, our mind has a way of saying, ooh, I'm in pain. And we've been programmed to find a way out of pain. That's first. We're programmed to say, ooh, I've got a splinter in my foot. Let me get it out. That's an appropriate response to pain, because our body says something is wrong. Pull it out. But when we pull the splinter out, there still is sometimes pain. So then it's, how do you hold the pain? How do you move through the discomfort of the splinter after that first reaction to remove it either worked or is impossible to do? And then it's, what do you do? How do you keep moving with that? Now, in my classes, like a lot of childbirth educators, we hold ice. And I have couples hold ice. I have parents hold ice. And they get that moment of, I want to put it down. But then what's next? What do they do next that helps them? And to explore that a little bit deeper and a little bit deeper, and finding what helps make the minute go faster. What helps? What doesn't help? Like, and what keeps you in your head? Because in labor, if we keep lots of conversation and jokes and questions, that keeps us up in our head, which isn't always helpful in labor. So it's, what are some things that can help you drop down into the body and into the flow of the moment that don't necessarily super engage your Apollonian brain?
Mm-hmm. And go more into the flow and less resistance. Yeah. And habits are so hard. I was like, right, immediately said, coping mechanisms, because coping.
Right. Because the word we're used to. And I use coping mechanism. That word shows up a lot for me as well. But there's just a slight shift that's starting to happen for me in thinking about it less in a grippy way and more in a letting go way. Mm-hmm. And it's just a nuance that I still use the term coping, because that is part of what we're doing, is we're developing coping skills, but we're also developing skills to flow, mm-hmm, to release, to let go.
Got it. And I will link on the show notes to an episode with Rhea Dempsey on the purpose of birth pain, which is, she goes at it from the point of view of, which is really helpful, of athletics and how we give medals to marathon runners, how there's a whole different modalities where we really help people cope or flow, mm-hmm, through, yeah, pain, right?
Cope and flow, because, yeah, there are times for each, for sure. Yeah.
And I think
there are times in athletics when we actually just need to grit our teeth and cope through something. And then there are times when we need to get out of our body's way and let it do what it needs to do. And both of those have purpose in labor too. I love that. I'm going to go back and listen to that episode.
Yeah. And if people have ever gotten a tattoo or done a piercing, like that's a moment of just sitting with the pain and
right.
exploring it and not resisting it and flowing. So that can also be if you have one of those.
Yeah. Or getting your teeth cleaned.
Yes. Mm.
That's another one. I practice every time I go to get my teeth cleaned. I'm like in my own practice, like, okay, this is what's happening. Let me work with this. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So then on
That one leads us. Yes. That one leads perfectly into the glorification of independence and the go it alone mindset. So this one is really, I've already mentioned it a little bit, but I'll just say this is the one where it says we don't have to do this by ourselves. You know, it's like, how can we learn to receive help? And that can be, you know, I hear a lot of people who come to my classes. I work predominantly with couples. And so when couples come to my class, there's often the birthing parent is saying, well, I really want my partner to know how to help me. Like, can you teach them how to help me? That's only one side of the equation. The other side of the equation is helping the birthing parent learn how to receive help. It's a dance. It's a both because there's that glorification of independence and the go-it-alone mindset that says, I should be able to do this by myself. And then when we bring in somebody to help us, we're like, they should absolutely know exactly how to do it perfectly without issue right off the bat. And really, it's a dance. It's like, how do I receive their positive intention to support me? How do I accept help, which is a huge one that happens in postpartum as well for some parents, is that help may be offered, and it may not be offered in the easiest to accept way. Like, call me if you need anything. That implies that you actually have to pick up the phone and ask for help. And yet, the part that keeps us often from picking up the phone and doing that is this, I should be able to do it by myself.
Right. And we shouldn't.
Right. And we shouldn't.
And
we shouldn't have to pick up the phone and ask for the help. We shouldn't. That's also the
well,
case.
But and that's where we get into points. Yeah. That we all live like we're not in communal living.
Right.
And who was it that was saying, oh my goodness, I forget what fun conversation I was having with somebody of when you, oh, that was it, Leslie Everest. And she did some work in Madagascar in villages there. And it's communal living. And so the babies do sleep with sleep with the parents to an extent. But when around 2 years old or whatever, the mom's like, I'm done with having a baby in my bed. She kicks them out, but they go and then sleep with the grandparents. So
right.
Everybody has their needs satisfied.
That sounds amazing. Yes. And that's what we're talking about here is that go it alone mindset, that the village, as opposed to, you know, that community to support us, it's absolutely part of what we need, and that we're bemoaning a lot in modern society is the loss of that. And yet we also have gotten so used to doing it by ourselves that we have our own programming to overcome as well.
Well, and it ties also to the first one of need of control and certainty, because if you've got different layers to address, if, say, for example, you know, you offer to fold my laundry or do my laundry and I'm not going to receive the help because I like my laundry done just so. It's like somebody's doing your laundry, just wear it however. Your clothes are not going to get ruined. And if not, you know, that's tomorrow's problem. Like,
exactly. Frankly, all of these, that's the reason control and certainty is first, is because they all are connected to that one.
Mm.
They are. So should we do the next one?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So the next one is the adherence to innocence. And this is that In some ways, it's connected to the culture of youth, the idea of blamelessness, and you know, this one is built in pretty strongly into U.S. culture, especially this idea that we can do no wrong, and that, you know, we don't look back on our history culturally and say, wow, you know, we did some wrong stuff, especially white culture. You know, it's like you look at some other cultures. My husband's from South Africa, and how they went through the truth and reconciliation process after apartheid. And it's like the US has never done anything like that, because we wrap up and look at we're innocent. We didn't do any wrong. We didn't know any better. You know, it's like, oh, there's kind of this blamelessness, and it's seeped into how we are it as parents, as people in the world, in this idea of I don't need to know everything. I don't need to educate myself or advocate for myself. I'm going to just trust. Some of that really gets us into some trouble.
And so can you speak a little bit more into how that shows up in birth? And, you know, how to counter it.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, one of the ways that that shows up is in the not willing to look at, back to the comment you made earlier about the happiness culture. It shows up in birth around the only positive birth stories, let's only talk about what might happen that's positive. I don't want to read the chapter on cesareans. I don't want to talk about the things that could go wrong. I just want to focus only on exactly what I want to create and make happen. So that innocence, that idea that we're going to just narrowly focus only on the positive, only on what we want. The, you know, candles and white nightgown flowing idea of birth. Like, that's the only option of birth that I want to think about.
And would that be also, would that also relate to the idea of like, no, I'm just going to birth, you know, like I trust my doctor, my provider, my midwife completely. Yep. And, you know, whatever they say, this is just, that's what it must
absolutely
be.
Absolutely. There's a, you know, a home birth version of it, and there's a hospital birth version of it, and everything in between. That is that innocence of I gathered with some birth colleagues recently, and we were talking about how there is sometimes a desire to hire the doula, hire the particular midwife, have a particular kind of birth location, in order to purchase the kind of birth they want. And that's an innocent belief that isn't saying, I might need to do the work. I might need to grow into this parent role, which requires a kind of maturity that is willing to look at the hard stuff, is willing to do some of the work themselves.
And I can see how not adhering to that, like wanting to stay in that innocence ideal, is really going to bite you in the butt when you during postpartum,
really,
when you're completely responsible, not only for your life, but of the life of this child, and having to make all the decisions for them, unless you just, you know, outsource them. But
right. We've got to learn how to do that. We've got to learn how to mature into the parent role, because you can't be a child and a parent. It's like a parent is different. You've got to let your baby be the child.
Mm-hmm. So then the next one, denial of death.
Yes. So the denial of death has both a real side and a symbolic side. So the real side is really looking at the truth that especially for birthing parents of color, that there are some really horrific statistics out there. And for all of us, there is still some, you know, it used to be, especially less so now, but it used to be that the most dangerous thing that a woman could do was to give birth. You know, that's not so much the case anymore for most of us, but we do need to be willing to look at some of that side of mortality and be willing to face some of that. And that stress and anxiety that is brought up in pregnancy is often connected to that. And it's also connected to the symbolic death, which is the one that I go into much more fully in the book, which is about the death of identity, the death of the capital S self. Because when we go through such a transformative experience as becoming a parent, a part of us dies. And this goes back to what you said earlier about the only constant is change. Yeah, this is change and even identity death. A part of us is gone. And how do we allow ourselves to be reborn from that identity death place? So it's the death and rebirth part that shows up in big rites of passage like childbirth.
And it's a huge part that I think now we're talking more about it, but it wasn't the case. We continue to talk more about it. It's increasing. But I do feel that even in postpartum, especially in postpartum, what makes it so difficult is not the having a baby part. The having a baby part, you'll figure out diapers and the change in schedule. And like, that's all, you get enough opportunities to practice that you'll figure it out, is my feeling. But what can really be the biggest obstacle is understanding that you've been transformed and you are no longer the person you were. And I can see how much it connects to that adherence of innocence, because it forces you, whether you want it or not, to then become the parent. And what is this new identity if you are now the parent or mom or dad, when that word used to be your dad or your mom or your parent, and now you've got to take it on and put it on and try like fit into it.
It's big and stuff. That's why those two are back to back. The adherence to innocence and the denial of death are linked. They're very closely linked.
Yes. Yeah. And it's people need to understand for sure. Yeah. Like, I love how deep you go into it. And that links, you know, in the show notes back to the episode we did on how birth will transform you.
It's all linked. It's all connected. Yes, absolutely. It is. Yeah. Yeah. And then the last one that I address in the book is the quest for perfection and exceptionalism. And this one also kind of connects back, or in some ways is very kind of two sides of the same coin of the control and certainty. You know, the idea that perfection exists, that there is an ideal way that something should look, be, behave, and that it's that only things that are perfect have value. And in reality, imperfection teaches us a whole lot. And we learning to embrace the imperfections in our lives is key to growth and continuing and moving forward. And the exceptionalism piece is that piece that can actually tend to fuel what are sometimes dubbed mommy wars, which is that idea that I know the best way, you know, being exceptional, and I need to export that to other countries, to other parents on the playground, to other birth professionals. It's like, this is the way, you have to do it my way. You have to do it the way I see is best. And that's the piece that exceptionalism is sort of perfectionism exported, right? It's like moving it out there to other people. And these get us into trouble and they keep us from connecting.
Yeah, and I can see how we get into real problems with that because, and back to what we do to our children and what was done to us in that sense that, you know, nobody thinks their child is average.
Right.
Right? My child is so this wonderful. And it's okay to be just quote unquote a person, right?
Yes. We've got such an issue right now with perfectionism. And I have, this is one, I mean, frankly, all of these are things that I work with myself personally. I may have written the book for myself. I hope other people enjoy reading it because I wrote it because I need these things. I feel like everybody does to some degree. And to unhook from that perfectionism and accept and open to enoughness, to mediocrity, to it's okay to fall down. That is part of what is the medicine we need in our culture right now.
Of course. And that there is no such thing necessarily as failing. Like you just didn't get it right that time.
Right.
And we can learn a lot from our babies that way when they are learning to walk or learning to crawl of like how many times do they attempt it before they actually get it. And it's just, you know, it's like, oh, I fell. I can't try this again ever again. I'm done. I could not do it. Right.
It's like none of us would ever walk if that was the case. You know, failure is just an attempt that didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
We have to just keep attempting and or try something different. Or keep, you know, or be like, okay, well, that one didn't work. You know, we would never berate our children for not running before they haven't even learned how to roll over. But we do it to ourselves all the time. It's like there are stages of growth. And how do we allow ourselves, especially as new parents, to be like, wow, I didn't know how to do that yet. That's okay. I don't know how to do this yet. I'm still growing. And to hold ourselves with some tenderness and love and kindness, developing a kind inner voice is one of the practices that I offer in this chapter, and how important that is for keeping us moving forward in the face of this ideal of perfection that somehow we believe we're supposed to obtain. It's like, no, it's like, how do we be okay with what is right here, right now?
Oh, and it's so incredibly important to realize these ideals that we hold and to what extent we hold them, because we all do. Like I'm reading through this and I'm like, yep. Mm-hmm. Perfection. Mm-hmm. How that does affect how we birth, affect how we parent, affect how we live, and how really, I mean, these are the things we deal with on a daily basis. The problem is, or the situation is that birth brings you that change, transformation from being an individual to becoming a parent, brings you face to face with all of these so hard.
Well that, said.
Right. Yes. So that if you're not ready for it, oh my goodness, that's where we damage ourselves. So I would so appreciate.
Yeah. And that's what makes me so excited because I get super excited about this opportunity that birth and new parenthood offers us to face these things in our lives. It is such a huge opportunity for growth. And that makes me excited.
Now, you and me both, like the wonders of transformation that are available in birth, it's actually a gift, right? When we realize that it's not, it is about having a baby, but it's so much more than having a baby in terms of our life journeys. And pretty much like the biggest, definitely one of the biggest experiences we'll ever have, because it brings us so close to all these things, like even death, right?
Yes, absolutely. Exactly. And that's what I hope people get from my book, is an opportunity to look at birth and new parenthood as a growth opportunity.
And not only does it do that, but it takes them one step further, Here's where I'm plugging your book because I've read it twice. It gives them some tools on how to explore that and how to be kind to themselves and kind of guide them a little bit through that
Absolutely.
Journey. Not just because otherwise you're just thrown into the wolves, which.
I hope that people take the tools and keep using them throughout their lives, not just for labor. Not just for birth, not just for postpartum, but I give tools that can be used well beyond the childbearing period.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, I think it's a book for anybody. Even if you've already, like, if you're looking to birth soon, yes, definitely help with those tools. But if you gave birth 15 years ago, 20 years ago, it's still great to look back and sort of clarify and name and identify and suss out that transformation that happened, because it happened no matter what.
That's what my mom says, but she's also my mom. She's like, I'm going to have my book club read it. I'm like, okay, mom, you're all grandmas. But she's like, yeah, but there's life lessons in there. So I hope that that's the case for people, that people find it valuable.
Well,
that was my purpose in writing it.
Yeah, I'm so glad you did write it. I feel like bookends, because last time we spoke, you hadn't written it. You were talking getting into it, and not the baby's almost here. Is there
Thank
anything?
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I really so appreciate your words and your support and the gift that you're giving out to birthing families and parents. It's really powerful what you do. And I so appreciate being a part of it this time. Thank you.
Yay. Thank you so much. If people want to get the book or connect with you or know more, how can they do that?
Yes. So the book is available for pre-order now and will be available January 28th in your mailbox if you pre-order it, pretty much wherever books are sold. And it's called Transformed by Birth by Britta Bushnell. That's me. And you can connect with me on my website, brittabushnell.com, and on social media platforms on Facebook and Instagram. Britta Bushnell, PhD, is my, I guess they call it a handle, right? Your social media handle.
I guess I call it a handle.
I guess so. I don't know. Something like that. And I also have a community on Facebook that's called Transformed by Birth Community, which is a group, a private group. So people can join that as well.
Excellent. And Britta is Britta.
Yes. Bushnell. Yes. Two T's and no C in the Bushnell. Yes, Britta, like the water filter, but two T's. Yes.
Excellent.
That's how I order my coffee. Britta, like the water filter. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Britta, like the water filter, for this conversation today. It's always lovely to talk to you.
Thank you, Adriana. I so love being with you. Thank you.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, send me messages, and more. And please join me and the wonderful Greer Kirschenbaum this Thursday, January 23rd at 8 p.m. Eastern Time at facebook.com/birthful for a live event with giveaways to celebrate Birthful's 5 years. We're also going to announce the winner of this week's bundle of goodies, and we're going to do a live giveaway for an infant sleep session with Greer among the people that join us for Facebook Live. So don't miss it. That session is valued at $250. Make sure you join us at facebook.com/birthful. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, the amazing Birthful patrons, and the wonderful people at Family Album and Better Help. Find Family Album on your favorite app store or by searching for Family Album on the web, and go to betterhelp.com/birthful to get 10% off your first month. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. And here's what Britta said when I asked her what she had for breakfast.
Considering it's only 8 a.m. here, I haven't had breakfast yet. I do have a cup of tea next to me, so I guess that counts.
I'm Adriana Lozada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to a mighty parent as they share their amazing story here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2020 by Adriana Lozada.